case. This case involves a conviction for Mr. Watson in 2011, first-degree murder and use of a weapon in a felony. It stems from an incident from 1978. This was a cold case where the client was arrested, obviously several decades after the incident occurred. The request of my client is that this matter be remanded back to the district court for an evidentiary hearing, which was denied in this case. The order of the district court that brought us here today is filled with inaccuracies, I note, first of all. My client was denied an evidentiary hearing on each of his requests, despite the fact that he filed essentially two different post-conviction motions. He filed one initially in March 2014. Almost immediately thereafter, the county attorney's office filed a motion to dismiss the motion for post-conviction relief, and there was a hearing that was held. At that time, he did not have counsel. In November 2014, he filed a supplemental petition for post-conviction relief. The court issued an order in November 2014 accepting that as a supplemental motion and then appointed counsel at that point. After the motion to dismiss had already been heard in part by the court, and at that point, counsel myself was asked to write a brief to respond to the state's brief that had been filed in response, and that's how we got here today. I note that in the supplemental motion that my client filed, my client goes in-depth about each one of his claims and requests for post-conviction relief. That includes naming experts he believes his trial counsel should have called with respect to DNA, explaining why he was seeking a fingerprint expert in his case, talking about his trial counsel's lack of exploration into whether or not other suspects were involved with some of the DNA that was located decades later. Some suspects that were named previously by OPD back in the 70s, other suspects that were never investigated but were named by different defense witnesses during the trial. Again, the district court order from Douglas County stated that dismissal was proper in this case because my client failed to state any specificity with respect to any of his claims, going as far as saying my client didn't name the particular officer whose testimony he felt the trial counsel should have been objecting to, not naming particular experts, not stating where he suffered prejudice as a result of his trial counsel's actions. But as this court can see in his supplemental filing, he goes in depth about each of those things, naming the officers, naming the experts, explaining where he feels that there were deficiencies with respect to trial counsel. Fortunately here, as far as the record before this court, this isn't a case where there's any indication on the record that his prior counsel ever sought other opinions from experts, ever consulted with an expert witness in the defense of Mr. Watson. So this isn't a case where we know exactly what those experts would have said, but they were chosen. It was decided not to use them during the trial. This is a case where there's been no exploration into those issues other than by Mr. Watson.
His discussion of DNA experts, for example, what exactly was the DNA expert going to say or do that would change the outcome in this case?
Mr. Watson argued in his supplemental filing that the particular expert that he has asked to look at his case would, first of all, attack the testimony of the state's witness as far as reliability of the DNA evidence in this case. Again, this is DNA that was tested almost 30 years after the alleged murder. So, and it's also a case where there were problems with the chain of custody and the evidence, as indicated even in the appellee's brief. There was evidence that was found when this case was opened back up in 2008, 2009, that was not consistent with the evidence found at the scene. There was...
Weren't all of those issues covered extensively in cross-examination?
Then there was cross-examination with respect to foundation, with respect to some of the chain of custody issues, but there was never any other witness brought in by the defense to counter state's witnesses to talk about the reliability of that DNA, or whether or not the state's expert witnesses on DNA, the standards that they applied were the same as the national standards, or whether or not there is There will be cross-examination points by other experts to attack what essentially is the most important piece of evidence in this case. It's all circumstantial, especially because by the time this came to trial, the majority of the witnesses were unavailable. They read their testimony into the record in some cases. There were very few witnesses left for the state or defense as far as this was involved. So in this case, the fingerprints, the DNA, these issues that Mr. Watson is attacking, that's the whole case.
Is he challenging the fingerprint evidence?
He does challenge the fingerprint evidence. He did not name a particular expert in his post-conviction filing, but he did go at great lengths to explain why he believes a fingerprint expert should have been retained by his counsel to attack the evidence that was given at trial. And essentially, his argument there was that he believes an expert witness would talk about the unreliability and subjectivity of fingerprint examination. I point out, again, even though he doesn't name a particular fingerprint expert, we're talking about an individual that I think he's done everything he can do. He's serving a life sentence right now, and he doesn't have financial resources or other resources to obtain these experts by himself. By the time that counsel was appointed for him in the district court, there had already been a motion to dismiss this post-conviction motion. There had already been an evidentiary hearing held just with respect to that, at which point the district court judge ordered briefing. This isn't a case where even I've had the opportunity to ask the court to grant expert witnesses or appoint expert witnesses to assist in fleshing out Mr. Watson's claims to determine whether or not there was error in this case.
Is there statutory authority for appointment of an expert witness in a post-conviction proceeding?
There is a statute in place with respect to indigent defendants receiving expert. An appointed counsel can ask the district court to appoint counsel or appoint experts to help the defense. I don't think, as far as I recall, Your Honor, I don't know that it specifically addresses post-conviction motions, but I would assume that the same standard would apply.
The statute that you're referring to is in section or chapter 29, article 39 of the revised statutes.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's the one, and we just had occasion to look at that statute, and while we were back there, I read that, and the definition of that seems to be indigent defendant is defined in such a way that it's all pre-conviction, not post-conviction. So in the post-conviction statute, you're not aware of any statute that authorizes appointment of an expert.
I'm not aware of anything independent of the statute that you were referring to, Your Honor.
All right.
But again, it's not all that uncommon for defense attorneys to ask for expert witnesses. It's not all that uncommon for that motion to be denied at that point of post-conviction. But I'm not aware of a separate statute that allows the district court to appoint expert witnesses upon the request of defense counsel.
Thank you.
I'm asking for the court to remand this matter for an evidentiary hearing, give Mr. Watson a chance to, and myself as counsel for Mr. Watson, a chance to question the trial and the appellate counsel in this matter with respect to their decisions in not obtaining independent witnesses, again, considering what the evidence in this case boiled down to. The record in this case is not complete or doesn't allow us to completely address those issues because the nature of his requests.
The supplemental filing to which you referred does not add any additional claims,
no,
does it?
It does not. It basically
enlarges on the factual allegations on the original motion.
Yes. And some of the arguments that he made in each of these petitions are of the nature where it boils down to whether or not there were particular objections or particular motions. Some of those things that could only be addressed by questioning his trial counsel. Obviously, there were foundational objections throughout the trial, some of the same evidence that he's opposing now, but
the district court treated the original motion and the supplemental, in effect, as a single filing.
That's the order.
You argue that it did so inadequately, but does the order at least purport to do that?
The order from November 2014 purports to do that, but then the ultimate order dismissing the matter without evidentiary hearing makes no mention and seems to completely ignore the supplemental filing Mr. Watson made, as it contradicts what's right in front of the court as far as the information provided.
But for our purposes, you would agree that we should look at those, the original motion and the supplemental, as if it were one document?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you.
Same amount of time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Tangeman, good morning to you.
Please accord I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska.
I hate to interrupt you this soon, but can I ask you the same question that I just asked your opponent, and that is, do you agree that we should read the original motion and the supplemental allegations as if it were a single document? All right, thank you.
I was actually going to start with that, Your Honor.
I should have just let you do it. I apologize.
As stated in our brief, it does appear that the final order from the court only addresses the allegations made in the original motion and not the allegations made in the supplemental. His supplemental motion did not allege any new claims. He reasserted the same 9 claims of ineffective assistance of counsel that he asserted in his original motion, and then he provided additional allegations in support of those claims.
Is this correct, then, that the order itself doesn't refer to those additional allegations,
correct,
which may have been more persuasive?
Correct.
Thank you.
It makes no mention of the supplemental motion at all.
I'm not recalling that you have conceded, that the state has conceded that an evidentiary hearing is required.
No, the state does not believe an evidentiary hearing is required, and we also believe, because the applicable standard of review is de novo in this case, it is unnecessary to remand back for findings on the additional allegations. We believe the court should determine whether Watson is entitled to an evidentiary hearing on each of the 9 claims of ineffective assistance of counsel as set forth in both the original and the supplemental post-conviction motion. State submits that when this court reviews those 9 claims de novo, this court will find that all of his post-conviction claims were properly denied without an evidentiary hearing, because the claims were insufficiently pled or affirmatively refuted by the record. So basically, we believe, despite the new additional allegations, it's still not enough to get the evidence.
What was the evidence that supported the conviction of the defendant?
The evidence that supported his conviction?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there was a sufficiency allegation on direct appeal, and this court's direct appeal opinion goes into that in detail. There was, it's circumstantial evidence. There's most of the circumstantial evidence merely places him in the apartment. The evidence that ties him to the murder is that his DNA was found on a hair that was in fecal matter that was in a towel right next to the defendant. The victim's car was found in the defendant's hometown of Illinois. The defendant started using aliases after the murder, lived out of state. His DNA was found on cigarette butts in the victim's car, on cigarette butts at the house, on a beer can at the house, and also fingerprints at the house.
So could a DNA expert have disputed the accuracy of those DNA results that link?
Well, based on his,
to the crime?
But based on his allegations, he doesn't really get into a DNA expert challenging the actual results. Instead, his allegations focus more on just attacking the science behind DNA testing and the statistics in general. I don't think he's provided sufficient allegations to warrant an evidentiary hearing, because he doesn't allege anything, any expert that would have said that the results in this case were incorrect. I think that even though he does name an expert, he appears to have just obtained that from some literature, and it's just attacking the science of DNA in general. And given the fact that DNA testing has been upheld under the Daubert standard, the state believes he cannot establish deficient performance or prejudice in an evidentiary hearing. Not warranted.
Is there, amongst these 9, is there any allegation by which a trial counsel's failure is deficient as a matter of law?
I don't think so. I believe most of the claims are refuted by the record, and that because he can't show either deficient performance or prejudice. some of the allegations he made about counsel not investigating a suspect. The record shows that counsel did attempt to investigate the suspect.
How about a is this an error, a failure to communicate a plea?
I think my understanding of his allegation is that the state made him a plea offer of manslaughter, that he could plead to manslaughter. And his allegation is that trial counsel communicated this offer to him, but told him that the maximum term for manslaughter was 20 years. Watson, in his post-conviction motion, was under the impression that at the time he committed the murder, manslaughter was actually 10 years. And so his claim is that trial counsel gave him erroneous advice about the maximum of manslaughter. And if he would have known that manslaughter was 10 years, he would have taken the plea deal. However, the statute, in effect at the time the crime was committed, was 20 years maximum for manslaughter. So Watson's claim is based on an erroneous assertion of what the penalty was for manslaughter at the time. I believe my brief sufficiently sets forth our response to each of the 9 claims. Except for what has already been discussed, I don't intend to get into those any further unless there are further questions from this court. We ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. So we will go on to the next final case of the day, which is Rodriguez versus Catholic Health Initiatives. Justice Wright is recused in this matter. Justice